the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to journey number 120 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Frog Kiss by Kevin J. Anderson. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. And I'm excited to finally bring this tale to you. It's been a long time in coming, as it's kind of a theme, basically, of everything I have outlying to produce for the podcast. I originally read this tale for Starship Sofa many, many years ago, and I never heard it come on the air. And I asked Tony Smith about it and said, "Are you still going to run that? Can I take that recording and run with it on my own?" And he says, "Oh yeah, no, I'm going to run it. So I didn't think any more about it. Time went by, more and more. Nothing, never heard it come on Starship so far, heard of it. And so I just kind of figured, well, you know what, by this time it's fair game. So I contacted Kevin J. Anderson myself and asked him, "Hey, remember you gave Tony C. Smith permission to do this?" And I narrated it, but he never ran it. "And I'd like to run it. I'd like to do it for you." And he was more than gracious about it. You know, I don't pay near enough what should be paid for the stories that I run. He would like to use this story, hopefully he still does, to give away as prizes to people or as a treat for somebody. Anyway, so I talked to him about that, and that was probably 2.5 years ago. And here I am thinking, gee, why doesn't Tony Smith put that out there? You know, why is he waiting for so long? Why doesn't he get it out there on the podcast? I already gave him the narration. But here I am taking 2.5 years to get this out. And part of it, I decided I didn't want to do it myself. I didn't want to just be the only narrator. I didn't want to be the only person on the story. I didn't want to play a female protagonist because I'm not very good at female voices. And so I decided to just get two actors to do the voices, and then I would be the narrator. I'm getting ahead of myself. You haven't heard the story yet. But anyway, so I got them to do the voices, and I've had this for a long time. The only reason I can give is, you know, there's been a lot of other things going on, and I really did want to do a really good production on this. Make this something that was really fun and really done well, especially if Kevin was going to use this to give out to fans and as a prize or a treat or whatever. And so I really wanted to do a good job, and you know, I can say that's my excuse. I did want to do a good job, but it is a shorter story, and it's late, very, very late. And again, I think you'll be hearing that from me on all these late productions that I'm working on. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about Kevin J. Anderson. You've probably heard his name before. He's written many, many tales. Of course, I think I first came to know his name because of the Jedi Academy trilogy, Star Wars Jedi Academy trilogy. That was one of the... of course, there was the Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire series that broke ground for new fiction for the Star Wars in 1991, and then a couple other novels started out, and the Jedi Academy trilogy was the second big series. You know, it was the next trilogy after Timothy Zahn's. I think there was a couple standalone novels in between there, But I enjoyed the Jedi Academy trilogy. I enjoyed a lot of the concepts. Seeing the new generation of Jedi, you know, seeing what else the Empire had to offer, even without the Emperor, and things like that. I really did enjoy that. And he's gone on to write other Star Wars novels, not only in the main universe, but also in the young adult series of Young Jedi Knights series. And he's done a lot of other tie-in type novels, but he's also done several of his own original novels. Kevin J. Anderson has actually published around 125 books, and more than 50 of which have been national or international bestsellers. As I said, he's written numerous novels in the Star Wars, the X-Files, and the Dune universes. He's also written a unique steampunk fantasy novel, Clockwork Angels, based on the concept album by the legendary rock group Rush. His original works include the Saga of the Seven Suns series, the Terra Incognita fantasy trilogy, the Saga of Shadows trilogy, and his humorous horror series featuring Dan Shamble, Zombie PI. He has edited numerous anthologies, including the 5x5 and Blood Light series. Anderson and his wife, Rebecca Mesta, are the publishers of World Fire Press, which you can get to at worldfire.com. I also learned recently that this is a story that Kevin wrote as a Valentine to Rebecca when they were dating. And so that makes it even more special. It also makes me wish I would have got it done before Valentine's Day so that it could have represented what it was originally written for. But anyway, I know you'll enjoy this story. I hope Kevin hasn't lost all patience with me on it. And again, I hope you enjoy. Why don't you come with me and let's journey into the Dermoth Swamps. Frog Kiss by Kevin J. Anderson. He had gotten used to it by now. The frog tasted cold and slimy against his lips, with a taste like brackish water, mud, and old compost. But Carrick gave it a dutiful smack on its mouth, hoping that it wouldn't suddenly turn into the fat old king, who had also been enchanted, along with several more desirable members of the royal family. But the frog just looked at him, squirmed, and then urinated on Carrick's palm. Nothing. Again. He took a dab of red pigment from his pouch, smeared it on the frog's head, and then tossed the creature through the trees and marsh grass. He listened to it plop into another pool. Another one tried and failed. Around him, the sounds of thousands of frogs croaked in the dense swamp, loud enough to drown out the whine of mosquitoes, the constant dripping of water, and the occasional belch of a crocodile. Sweat and dirty water ran in streaks from his brown hair, down his cheeks, and avoided the frog slime around his mouth. He had caught and tested more than 3 dozen frogs already, but it would be years before he could find them all. And that was only if the members of the frog-cursed royal family remained alive in the deep swamps. A crocodile splashed somewhere out in the network of cypress roots and branches. Somehow, Carrick couldn't imagine the brittle old queen deigning to eat flies, not even if they were served to her by someone else. When the evil wizard Cosimor had taken over the kingdom less than a year before, he had followed the traditional path of sorceress usurpers by capturing the entire royal family and transforming them into frogs, and then turning them loose into the sprawling, infested swamps of Dermoth. Cosimor had intended to tax the kingdom to its death, drive the subjects into slavery, and generally keep himself amused. But less than 3 weeks later, the wizard had died, choking on a fishbone. No vengeful curse, that.
simply poor cooking. Now, the kingdom had been left without any rulers, not even the incompetent but somehow endearing royal family. Carrick, who lived in a hut on the fringes of the Dermoth swamps, trapping muskrats and selling the fur in the noisy walled town, had decided to try to find the royal family in its exile, free at least one of them with a kiss, and then count on his reward. A palace of his own, perhaps? Gold coins stacked as high as an oak tree? Fine clothes. He pulled at his dripping, mud-soaked rags. Yes, fine clothes first. And then, perhaps, the hand of one of the princesses in marriage. He spat drying slime away from his lips. But first he had to catch the right frog, and they all looked alike. He slumped down on a rotting log covered with Spanish moss, then looked across at the piled undergrowth to see a bloated old bullfrog sitting under a drooping fern. Plainly visible on the frog's back were three equally spaced dark blotches, just like the supposed birthmark carried by every member of the royal family. Was this the old king, then? The fat duchess, the king's sister? It didn't matter to Carrick. The frog sat right in front of his eyes. It had always taken him too long to see what was right in front of his face. He didn't want to hesitate too long. Carrick shifted his body forward and then lunged, splaying out his mud-caked fingers. He skidded through a spider web, needle-thin fronds, and dead leaves, but the bullfrog squirted away from him. He scrambled and grabbed again. He didn't see the girl until she leapt out from the bushes in front of the bullfrog, opened up the mouth of a large squirming sack, and swept the frog inside. The bullfrog made a croak of alarm, but then the girl spun the sack shut.
"Got him,"
she said, giggling. Then she sprinted away through the underbrush, leaving only disturbed willow branches dangling behind her.
"Hey!"
Carrick shouted and jumped to his feet. He ran after her, flinging branches out of the way. He splashed through puddles of standing water, squished on sodden grass islands, and ducked his head in buzzing clouds of mosquitoes. All around, the other frogs continued their songs.
"That one was mine!"
"Not anymore."
He heard her voice from the side, in a different direction from where she had disappeared. He looked in time to see her running barefoot down a path only she could see. Barefoot! Carrick ran after her. He found himself panting and sweating. He had grown up in and around these swamps. He considered himself to be an exceptional woodsman in even the deepest parts of the morass. He could outrun and outhunt anyone he had ever known. But this girl kept going at a pace he could not hope to match. He stumbled. He missed solid footing. He splashed scummy water all over himself.
"Wait!"
he shouted. He heard only the crocodiles growling.
"If you'd look over here, you'd have a better chance of seeing me."
She laughed again. He whirled to see her across a mucky pool not 20 feet in front of him. Without thinking, since he was wet and filthy anyway, he left the path and charged across the way.
"Give me my frog!"
Carrick tried to run with both feet, but each step became more difficult as the ooze sucked at his boots. He had to get the bullfrog with the 3 spots. He knew it was somebody from the royal family. The girl probably didn't know what she had. Maybe she wanted to eat it. He sloshed onward, but before he had gone halfway across the pool, he felt the muck dragging him down. He sank to his waist, but found he could not take another step. He continued to submerge in the ooze.
Oh no.
From the spreading cypress tree over his head, he heard the girl's voice.
"You should be more careful out here in the swamps. Plenty of dangerous things out here. Crocodiles, water moccasin snakes, milk spiders bigger than your hand, poison plants."
Carrick looked up to see her sitting on one of the branches, holding onto the frog sack with one hand and munching on a dripping fruit in the other.
"But you really have to watch out for that quicksand. That's especially bad."
"Would you help me out of this?"
He looked at her. He had sunk up to his armpits and felt the cold muck seeping into his pores. The mud crept to the tops of his shoulders. Carrick had to lift his head to keep his chin out of the ooze.
Please?
I don't know. You were chasing me.
She finished her fruit and tossed the pit down. It splashed beside him.
I'll tell you what you got in that sack of yours.
It's frogs.
No, if you just let me kiss one of them, I'll show you something magic.
He had to talk rapidly now. The quicksand had reached his lips.
Oh, you mean that? Sure, I've got the whole royal family here.
She reached in and pulled out another frog, this one sleek and small. It also had the three identical splotches.
You don't think you were the only one to get the idea for finding the frogs in the swamp, do you?
Actually, Carrick had thought he was the only one to think of that. Once again, the obvious was staring him in the face.
But you were going about it all wrong. You kept trying to kiss them out here in the swamp. Now tell me, just what would you have done if the frail and arthritic Queen Mother had appeared? Or one of the dainty princesses who would squeal at the sight of a beetle? How would you get them back? Makes more sense to me just to carry the frogs in a sack, go back to town, and then change them all back. Reward would still be the same, maybe more for saving them the journey.
Carrick had to lean his head back to keep his nose and mouth above the surface.
Will you please help me out now and give me advice later?
She shrugged.
You haven't asked me the right question yet.
What is the question?
Ask me what my name is. I'm not going to risk my life to rescue a total stranger.
What's your name? Tell me quick.
I am Raffin. Pleased to meet you.
She paused.
And what's your name?
I'm Carrick. Help!
She tossed a vine down that struck near his face. Carrick grabbed at it, clawing at the slick surface of the vine with his mucky hands. But he managed to haul himself forward toward the edge of the pool of quicksand. He heaved himself out onto the soggy ground and shivered. He had lost his left boot, but he had no intention of going back to get it. When he looked up at the tree, Raffin was gone. After dark, when Carrick remained cold and clammy, but unable to light a fire, he saw an orange light flickering through the tangled branches. He followed it to Raffin's fire, then crept close to where he could see. She sat humming to herself and holding four sticks splayed into the flames. Little strips of meat had been skewered on the wood and sizzled in the light. The bound bundle of royal frogs sat beside her.
Come closer and sit down, Carrick. You're making enough noise at being quiet.
Angry, Carrick came out of his hiding place and strode with confidence into her firelight. Finally, he sighed and shook his head.
I thought I was good in the swamps, moving silently, always knowing my way. I can't believe I'm being so clumsy around you.
Raffin shrugged.
You are good, the best I've seen, but I'm better.
Her long, pale hair must once have been blonde, but now had taken on the color of fallen leaves and dry grass. Her eyes looked startling blue within the camouflage of her appearance. Raffin had washed most of the grime from her face, arms, and hands before preparing her food. Carrick didn't want to imagine what he looked like himself. Raffin took one of the sticks out of the fire and blew on the sizzling strips of meat.
Frog legs filleted.
At his shocked expression, she laughed.
No, just normal frogs. Don't worry. Would you like some?
Carrick swallowed.
I haven't eaten anything all day.
Say please.
Please? Raffin, may I please have some?
Of course. You're my guest. I saved your life. Do you think I'd refuse a simple request like that?
He took the stick she offered and ate the crispy meat right off the bark so he wouldn't have to touch it with his dirty fingers.
What are you doing out here all alone in the swamps?
I live out here. Don't worry, I can take care of myself.
Carrick could believe that. He guessed she was only a couple years older than himself.
But I don't mind company once in a while.
Suddenly, Raffin appeared shy to him.
Just listen to those night sounds, the frogs and the humming insects. Why would anyone want to live in the town?
Carrick frowned and ate the last piece of meat.
Then, why are you trying so hard to get the royal frogs?
Because you are. I've been watching you for days. It's been fun. Besides, I have dreams of getting a prince of my own.
They talked for much longer after that, but Carrick could get no better explanation from her. He felt the weariness from the day sapping his strength, making him drowsy. He interrupted what she was saying.
Raffin, I am going to sleep.
He saw her smile as he let his eyes drift shut.
Make yourself at home.
When Carrick cracked his eyes open again an hour later, his body screamed at him just to keep sleeping. But he couldn't. He had something much more important to do. Raffin had stayed beside the fire, which now burned low and smoky, still driving the mosquitoes away. She lay curled up on the ground, her cheek pillowed on her scrawny arms. She looked very peaceful and vulnerable. Carrick frowned, but then thought of palaces and princesses and fine clothes. The fire popped as two logs sagged. Carrick used the noise to cover his own movements as he crept to his feet. She had left the sack containing the royal family sitting unguarded on the other side of the camp. He shook his head, wondering why she had made it so easy for him. He picked up the sack and slipped out of the firelight, starting to run as soon as he got out under the moonlit trees.
Carrick!
She shouted behind him. He stopped trying to be silent. The marsh grass whipped around him as he picked up speed. Willow branches snapped at his eyes. He kept splashing in puddles or flailing his arms at large, flapping night insects.
Carrick, come back!
He didn't answer her, but started to chuckle. He could make it out of the swamp to his hut. He would go immediately into the walled town and kiss all the frogs, even the old queen mother, and bring them back before Raffin could find him. He used all of his forest skills to weave his path. He couldn't hear her following, but then he doubted if he would. She was too good for that. Carrick looked behind him as he ran, seeking some sign. Raffin did impress him with her knowledge of the swamps. She could teach him many things. He decided that he would share his treasure with her anyway, once he got it. But for now, he wanted to succeed on his own, to impress her that his own survival abilities weren't so trivial either. He tripped on the tail of the first crocodile and could not stop himself until he had stumbled into a cluster of the beasts. Once again, he had been looking in the wrong place and missed what was right in front of him. The crocodiles hissed and belched at him. Carrick cried out. He could count at least seven of them, startled out of their torpor and suddenly confronted with something worth eating. An old bull scuttled toward him, looking as large as a warship. It opened its mouth so wide that Carrick felt he could have walked inside without ducking his head. He turned and searched for a way out. Hissing and snapping their enormous jaws, the crocodiles moved in. The old bull lunged. Carrick leaped back, caught his heel on the long body of one of the smaller reptiles, and sprawled backward. Even the smaller crocodile chomped at him. Carrick dropped his sack of royal frogs. He scrambled to his hands and knees, looking for an escape. The moonlight made everything dim and confusing. He thought he saw a flashing orange light behind a sketchy web of cypress roots, but he concentrated only on the nightmare of wide, fang-filled jaws. Raffin appeared and struck the snout of the nearest crocodile with her roaring torch.
Get away from him!
The beast hissed and grunted as it lurched backward. Carrick blinked in amazement. In her other hand, Raffin held a pointed stick that she jabbed at the remaining crocodiles. The beasts backed away. The enormous bull stood his ground and let out a deep growl from somewhere at the bottom of his abdomen. Carrick crawled to his feet, too stunned and frightened to be much help. Raffin faced the bull's charge and shoved her torch at her attacker. The crocodile hissed and snapped at her, but she was quick with the end of her torch, touching the burning edge to the soft tissue inside the reptilian mouth. Carrick heard the sizzle of burning meat. With a defeated roar, the bull backed away, and then, in a final gesture of frustration and spite, he lashed out with his long snout and snapped up the tied sack of royal frogs. The frogs made a combined sound of someone stepping on a goose. The giant crocodile crunched down with his jaws, chomped again, then swallowed. After a satisfied grunt, the crocodile crawled out of the clearing and splashed into the water.
I told you to be careful out in the swamps. Do I have to watch out for you all the time?
Carrick sat stunned.
They're all gone. In one gulp. The whole royal family.
He shook his head.
I never meant for that to happen.
Raffin took hold of his hand and pulled him to his feet.
The kingdom will do fine without them. They weren't particularly worth rescuing.
She stared at him, but he continued to sulk.
Hey, it was fun while it lasted.
No, I meant my reward. The gold, the fine clothes, the palace.
And what would you do with all that stuff?
She looked at him, then tugged at his old, mud-caked tunic.
Fine clothes? Are you seeking what you really want, or just what you think you're supposed to want? What other people tell you to want isn't always right for you.
Carrick lowered his head, sighed deeply. He looked at himself and realized she was right.
If I had a palace, I suppose I'd just track mud in all the time.
Raffin giggled.
It's not so bad out here, you know.
But what about my princess?
Raffin flicked her hair behind her shoulders and looked angry for a moment, then spoke in a very shy voice.
You could stay in the swamps.
She paused.
With me.
Carrick looked up at her and listened to the frogs and the night insects. One of these days, he was going to learn to notice the things right in front of him.
Hello, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that story. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a neat take on the frog prince or princess and the frog or whatever type of story. A lot of fun ideas in there. And I like the characters. I like especially Raffin. As for the cast of characters for this production, we have Pat Crane of the Convert to Raid podcast, as well as the Inside the Studio video series about audio editing, which is very interesting. And he played Carrick. And then we have podcast novelist and professional audiobook narrator Renee Chambliss reading the part of Raffin. And then I, lovable furry old Marshall, was the narrator for the story. I'm not quite sure. I don't have a lot to talk about tonight. One of the things, just looking through the list of Kevin J. Anderson's books, kind of makes me interested to read his zombie PI series. That looks like it could be some fun. Also kind of interested in his Dune books. I recently listened to the audiobook of Dune. I saw the David Lynch adaptation of Dune many years ago, and I've watched it at several times but I don't know if I've ever sat down and watched the entire movie all the way through due to various lack of interest or slow spots or those types of things. But I liked what I was seeing. I liked the idea of Dune and characters and the planet and those types of things. But I guess just that the movie didn't do enough for me, because I never was able to get all the way through it. I've seen various parts at different times. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to give Dune a chance. I'm going to listen to the audiobook, because if I sat down to read it, I probably wouldn't finish it either. And so I listened to the audiobook, and I really did enjoy Dune. I can see why Frank Herbert's original novel was successful, and that he was able to write other Dune books. And I believe his son has done some as well. And now I learned that there's several here by Kevin Anderson. And so I might end up checking some of those out. Thinking about that also, too, I think it might be kind of fun to interview Kevin and talk to him about his experience of writing in the Star Wars universe, writing the Jedi Academy trilogy and those things. You know, maybe it'd be fun to have him as a guest on the Delusions of Grandeur podcast that I do with Rish Outfield. I think that would be a lot of fun to kind of see how it works, and to get his opinions on the new movie and the decision to make a lot of the expanded universe of Star Wars pretty much at base set zero and not adopted as official canon to the Star Wars universe. I haven't read anything about how he's felt about that. I could probably find that, but it would be more enjoyable, I think, to interview him. So I'm probably going to ask him if he'd be willing to do that. And I think that'd be fun to do over on Delusions of Grandeur. As far as the Journey Into podcast, I'm continuing to work towards the Edgar Allan Poe month and work on rewards for the Kickstarter and those types of things. I hope you're having a good 2015. I hope you're enjoying this year. But I think I'm going to duck out of here early. So there's my dog snoring in the background. Sorry about that. So look out for quicksand. Stay safe out there. And journey on.
Hi, this is Renee Chambliss, and I'm here to tell you that the Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. This means that while you cannot change it or sell it, you are encouraged to share it however and with whomever you would like. The theme music for the podcast has been provided by Man in Space.